Once upon a time, there was a man, and he started developing a very strange problem, which was that if he got stressed, he'd start forgetting stuff. You know, just little stuff like his keys or where he left his jacket. But if he got more stressed, why, he'd start forgetting more significant things. And one time, he started getting stressed about forgetting stuff. And that's where his trouble really started. Because now his stress started building upon itself as he realized what he'd just forgotten. And he'd get yet more stressed. And then some bigger thing would drop out of his memory. And so it became kind of a cycle. Until he started forgetting some really basic things, like really fundamental things, like what his name was, like where he lived. And he found himself one time just sitting in the street with his feet in the gutter, sitting on the pavement and just staring off into space, lost. And this little girl, she comes up to him. And she says, "Man, what are you doing sitting on the pavement with your feet in the gutter? The pavement's not for sitting on. What are you doing? Where do you live?" And he looked at this little girl. And she was just pure innocence. She was just asking pure innocence. He said, "Well, that's my problem. I got this problem and I can't remember. I can't remember where I live." "You don't know where you live?" said the girl. No, I don't. If I knew, I'd be there right now." Well, she was also a very practical kind of girl. She said, "Well, that won't do. Come on, let's go and find out where you live." And he thought, "Well, okay. And he got to his feet and he let her lead him by the hand. But they didn't really know who to ask. You see, they thought maybe if we find some wise people, we'll ask them, but they didn't really know who that would be. They started studying the faces of people going past. "Maybe old people," she suggested. But when they studied the faces of old people going past, well, they didn't look much wiser than anyone else. In fact, some of them looked rather troubled. But then, just as they were about to switch strategy, they saw this old woman coming towards them. And she was just shining. She was kind of radiant in the way that occasionally old people can be. Just radiant she was. "We can ask her," said the little girl. "All right," said the man, who could see the same thing. "This man's forgotten where he lives," says the little girl. And the old woman, who was very wise, she looked at the man and then she looked down at the girl and she said, "Well, it's not so unusual. Most of us don't know where we really live." "I do," said the little girl. And then she said her name and her address and stared defiantly at the old woman. "Well, where's that then?" said the old woman. "Oh," and then the girl named the next level up, the city. But then she asked for the country, and where's that? And then the continent, and where's that? And then she was talking about the planet. "And where's that?" said the old woman. Well, the girl knew her astronomy as well, and so it kept on going. The solar system, and the Milky Way, and the universe. "And where's that?" said the old woman. And that was when the girl was truly stumped. The old woman just smiled. She said, "Look, I did tell you most people don't know where they really live. But don't worry. Maybe I can help you both." And she led them back to her house. And she had the loveliest, coziest house I think you ever saw. It was so cozy and warm and you just felt good stepping inside there. And she told them to sit in those two very comfortable chairs. And she made them tea and brought out a plate of biscuits that were especially lovely. She probably made them herself. She said, "Right then, I've got a story for both of you." And this This is the story that she told. Once upon a time, there was a man whose hearing was especially acute. He could hear so much that living in the city where he'd been raised, why, it just became more and more unbearable to him. By the time he was a young man, why, he had to leave the city behind with all its noise and its clamour and its cacophony. And he found himself living in a quieter place, in a little town. But as he got older, why, it just got more and more sensitive, his listening, until soon this town was, even that was unbearable. And he found himself seeking out a quieter place, a refuge in the countryside, maybe that village he'd seen, and before long he'd relocated. And this was indeed a really quiet and sleepy place, and there wasn't much noise there except for cows mooing and the occasional horse cart rumbling through, but there really wasn't much more than that. And at first he was happy, but eventually, why, it started all over again, the sense that the noises that people made were assaulting him. Until before long he resigned himself to never living among people again, and he made his way out of that village and he walked up a mountain to get as far away as he possibly could from the clamour and the noise and the cacophony of people. And there, up on the mountain, why, it was so quiet. It was so peaceful. It was so still. And at last he was happy. And he found indeed that he could take certain herbs and bark and various other things that he would find growing in nature. And to his delight, these things, they would accentuate this gift that he had of being able to hear, such that he felt as if he could hear the animals all around him, not just their sounds, but their souls. As if he felt as if he could hear the sky, the clouds, not just the wind up there, but somehow the spirit of the air. But then, when his hearing became most especially acute, it extended far, far beyond the mountain, down into the valley, down to where people live. And there, although he couldn't hear the clamour and the cacophony of their cities and their towns, he nonetheless started to hear the sound of the soul of humanity. At first it was a little dim, but then it became clearer and clearer until it was waking him up in the middle of the night. Until it was there when he went to sleep. Until it was there when he woke up in the morning. But it was the disturbed nights that were the hardest. For he would sense and hear quite distinctly that humanity was forgetting what it really was. He could hear it in the sound that people were simply forgetting who they really were because the old ways that they had of reminding themselves were dying out. There was nothing on the outside to remind them of who they really were. And so their knowing of this was just dying away like a bell that's been struck and reverberates for a time and then grows quiet. This was the sound of the soul of humanity, for no one was listening. And this understandably was very disturbing for our friend. But even more disturbing was the realization that came hot on the heels of this insight. And that was that he had to do something about it. He really did have to do something about it. He had to go down to the people, go down to the city and tell the queen herself what was happening to her people. And this disturbed him greatly, for he'd come to love his peace and his quiet up there on the mountainside. But he knew he had to do this, for the sake of his own humanity, for the sake of everybody's. And so, because he was quite attuned by this time to everything that was around him, he managed to make himself over several days a pair of earplugs from bark and sap, resin and leaves all smooshed together, and he managed to make some earplugs that were quite good, he felt, at keeping out noise. And so, armed with these, he set out on his way down the mountain. But when he came to the city, oh, the noise that greeted him, it was almost unbearable. So he pushed his earplugs deep into his ears as far as he could, and he walked through the city as if he was trying to protect himself from something, which he was, and eventually he comes to the Queen's palace, and there's a guard on duty outside, and he says what his business is, and the guard says something back, and of course he can't hear him because he's got those earplugs in, so he has to take them out, and now, oh, the sounds that flood in, they're like an assault. He can hardly stand up, he can hardly breathe. He says again, I need to see the Queen. What's it about? Says the guard, even louder this time, which is like being hit in the face for our friend. I need to tell her that the people are forgetting who they really are. They're forgetting who they really are because they can't hear the sound of their own souls. The guard just stares at him. He says, well, you can't just see the Queen just like that, and certainly not for just old, well, anything. No, but this is important, says the old man. This is a vital concern to Her Majesty. You must tell her, will you? Well, I'll see what I can do, says the guard, but he's already heard enough. This guy sounds a bit mad. Just wait here, he says. Right then, says the guard, says the old man, and with great relief, he sticks the earplugs back in his ears and he sits on the step right next to the guard's post. Does the guard go and tell the Queen? No. Does he value his job? Yes. So he just stands there rather uneasily, next to the old guy, and, well, he wanders off a little bit just to pretend he's doing something in the palace, and then he wanders back again. The man's still there. You see, what he's hoping is that this old crazy guy is just going to wander off somewhere else and bother somebody else elsewhere in the city. But he doesn't go away. He's clearly a little more determined than the guard suspected. So the next morning, when the Queen wakes up and looks out of her window and sees that funny old man still sitting there with something strange sticking out of his ears, she says to the Chamberlain, who's that down there, that funny little old man?
I'll go and find out, says the Chamberlain.
And he goes downstairs and he speaks to the guard, and the guard says, well, it's a little bit, crazy sounding, but this is what he told me. Chamberlain goes back up to the Queen, explains things. Queen looks out the window again. There's something slightly enigmatic about that little old man sitting there with funny things sticking out of his ears. She says, well, I forget things. Maybe he can help me. The Chamberlain wasn't expecting that, but he goes down and tells the guard, and the guard ushers the old man into the palace. It's wonderful to be walking there. He even takes his earplugs out, because it's so peaceful and quiet. There, walking along inside the Queen's palace, just tinkling fountains is all a person can hear. Ah. But before long, he's sitting there in front of the Queen, who's sitting on her throne and saying, forgetting things? What do you mean? And thereupon he explains everything. How people can no longer hear the sound of their own souls, how they're forgetting who they really are, and he fears that a great calamity will befall the realm before too long. Well, we must stop that, says the Queen. What can be done? And right there and then, our friends listening, why it becomes most especially acute. The Queen's question drives him deep inside of himself. The Queen has asked for an answer, and he does what he does in any situation where more is called from him. He listened more deeply. And as he did so, why? A story emerged inside of him. Yes, a story. And I'll tell you that story right now. Once upon a time, when the world was all made, but before people walked upon it, the gods and the goddesses who had made the world, why, they all gathered together and they said, such a shame. All this beauty, all this masterful craftsmanship and artistry, look what we've made, and no one to appreciate it. We must make creatures that can experience and enjoy all the beauty that we've made here. And one of the gods stepped forward and said, I know what they must have, these creatures, if they are to live here upon this earth, if they are to survive, indeed. They must warm to me, for this was the god of fire. They must warm to me and seek out my warmth and my light, for it will protect them and keep them safe on their long evolutionary journey. Oh, everybody thought that inspired. And they all clapped and thanked the god of fire for his great wisdom. Well, then, the god of ice and snow stepped forward, and he said, they must fear me. They must fear my touch and retreat into their caves and retreat to his fire. That way they will know how to navigate their long evolutionary journey safely. And everybody thought that terribly wise and marvellously helpful. But then the goddess of wind stepped forward, and she said, they must learn to love me when I am gentle, when I caress their cheeks, when I play through the trees, yes, when I rustle the leaves. They must know and become quite still. And in those moments, all their cares shall drop away, and they shall fully appreciate the beauty of the world. Marvelous, marvelous, said all the other gods. That's inspired. Well, then another goddess stepped forward, and she was the goddess of love. And she said, they must feel that I have started a song inside of them, which they must finish if it's the one thing they do in their lives. And all the other gods and goddesses, why, they swooned when they heard what the goddess of love had said. And they felt indeed that these new creatures, why, they would do well upon this earth. But then another god spoke up, who was so small, so short, that they all had to step back and make a ring around him so as to be able to see him better. And this was the god of mystery. And he said, they must know me in the center of their being. They must know and feel me and be quite sure that they themselves are a mystery. And if ever they fail to notice me, if ever they cover me over with certainty and knowing, if ever they forget the mystery that lives at the heart of their being. Why, a terrible calamity will befall them. Well, the other gods and goddesses didn't really know what to make of that, but someone spoke next and on it moved, and before long all the gods and the goddesses had spoken. And the man who'd been telling his story, he came to the end of it. So that, Your Majesty, is how we came to be here, I believe. But this is awful, said the Queen. This is a calamity. We have to find the God of Mystery and ask him what to do. Where is he? And just as before, no sooner had his queen commanded him than our friend, he started to listen very, very deeply. And he listened so acutely, so sensitively, his listening trained over so many years that it spread out across the queen's realm. It spread all the way to the very edges of the world. And there, sitting on the beach at the edge of the world, he heard the God of Mystery breathing. I hear him, he said to the Queen. I hear him. He is far, far away. Never mind that, says the Queen. Never mind how far away he is. We've got to find him. And so they set off, the two of them, and they walked through her entire realm all the time. He was listening and listening and saying this way and now that way. And on and on and on they went until the Queen's feet were quite sore, until she was starting to become a little bit impatient and a bit snappy with him. Are we not there yet? And when are we going to be there? And finally, why, they could hear the sound of a mysterious ocean ahead of them. And this was the great ocean of mystery. The great ocean of mystery from which we have all emerged and into which we will one day all of us go. The great ocean of mystery that lies beyond the known world. He is very, very close. I can hear him. And before long, why, they could see the God of Mystery sitting there on the beach, gazing out at the unknowable ocean. And he could see already, did our friend, he could already see that the God of Mystery was smiling. He was indeed smiling. He's smiling, he said. I can see, says the Queen. I don't need special ears to see that. He's smiling. And as they approached where the God of Mystery, he was beaming from ear to ear as he turned around to them. He said, you've done very well to find me. Hardly anybody ever manages to find me. Well, he's got really good hearing, says the Queen. He must have, says the God of Mystery. Look, says the Queen, we've come all this way because we want to restore my people's sense of mystery, and the world is about to suffer a terrible calamity. Can you not help us? And he smiles again, although he was already smiling, but he smiled again, and he looked down at the sand that was there on the beach, and he reached down and he grabbed a handful of that sand, and he pulls out a leather pouch and he pours the sand into the leather pouch, and he says, take this. And she takes that leather pouch and she looks inside, and what does she see? But there, inside that leather pouch, why? All those grains of sand, why, they've become jewels. And what does she do? She goes back to her palace. And she sets up a great tent in her garden. And there, she tells stories. For each one of those gems, was a story. Yes, each one of those gems was a story. A story that just listening to it undoes your sense of certainty. A story that just by listening to it you start to wonder why indeed you got here, what indeed the purpose of all this is, and why indeed you're constantly looking for answers. In the end, people preferred not to know. In the end, they started to gain a taste for mystery. For in mystery, everyone can relax, because nothing is in control. In a mystery, everybody can relax because there's actually nothing to do, because the mystery circumscribes the entire realm. The mystery circumscribes the entire realm, and there is actually really nothing to do except bathe in that which is already here. And sometimes the breeze would blow through the palace grounds, and the topmost leaves of the trees there, they would rustle with a harmony so fine that the queen would pause in the middle of her song and everybody would breathe and sigh. And that moment right there seemed to be pregnant with mystery. After a few more of her stories, why, people started to feel as if there was a song inside of them, an unfinished song, and that something had compelled them to go out into their lives, to go out into the world and find the ending lines of that song. And as for our friend, why, he made his way back up the mountain. But what a sound that greeted him there. What a sound that greeted him. For in all four corners of the Queen's realm, he heard the sound of the soul of humanity being restored. He heard the sound of the soul of humanity being listened to again. And he was ever so happy. The old woman, sitting there in her little cottage, in her little house, she came to the end of the story that she'd been telling to the little girl and the man who'd been forgetting everything. "You see," she said, "we're all a bit like that. We've all forgotten where we really come from." And the man, he just stared at her. He said, "I'm glad that I forgot enough that it brought me here." And after that, why, whenever he started forgetting things, whenever he'd get a little stressed and start forgetting little things, he'd remember that big thing. He'd remember that great big thing. And he'd stop feeling so worried. And before long, he'd find that little thing that he'd lost. Where did I hear this story? Well, you see, I was passing that kingdom, and I managed to find my way to the Queen's palace, and there I saw this great big tent, and there were all these people listening to the story, and I went inside. I thought, well, who's going to be telling stories here? It's probably some jester or the court storyteller. But no, it was the Queen herself. And never a more lovely scene did you see than all the Queen's people just sitting and listening. And I joined them, I did, I joined them, and I sat and I listened, and I thought this the most marvellous storytelling I'd ever heard. But when it was all over, when all the people had gone and the Queen was just packing up her loot and putting it back in its box and getting ready to go back and have a little bit of royal supper, I said, "Your Majesty, I'm just a humble storyteller, but I would like to know how it was that you got to learn so many fabulous stories. And you know what she told me? You've probably already guessed. She told me, as explanation, this story that I just told you. Yes, this story that I just told you.